Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Rumour Mill. I'm Johnny Burrow and I'm here to talk you through all the latest rumours. But we're not just doing gossip and conjecture as ever here on the Rumour Mill. We are looking to work out which of these deals are actually realistic. Which players could your club really sign? It's a Football League focus tonight, so we're starting with Aston Villa. Now, if the rumours are to be believed, if we're trusting the back pages, it's going to be a busy summer. The Sun are reporting that they're in for Jack Butland, Stoke City's England international goalkeeper, for £20 million. But the rest of the players that they're being linked with the possible exception of Bradley Dack of Blackburn, are already players who manager Dean Smith knows rather well. He signed Jota from Birmingham City. He, of course, managed Jota at Brentford. He's now apparently made a bid for Brentford's left winger Saïd Benrahma, the fantastic, tricky little Algerian. Sky Sports saying that £10 million bid, slightly upwards of that figure, by the way, has been rejected. They're also being linked with Neil Morpay, Brentford's star striker, and, of course, Romain Sawyers as well. There's a question here on Villa, because on the one hand, they're being linked with these modest deals, the championship recruitment where you're doing things sensibly, but equally, they're being linked with stars. We were hearing in the Birmingham Mail yesterday that they could be into Celta Vigo's Uruguayan striker Maxi Gomez. Now, this isn't a new name in this summer's transfer rumour mill. It wasn't a new one last summer as well, by the way. He's been linked with West Ham, he's been linked with Everton, he's been heavily linked with Tottenham Hotspur. But I can confidently predict that he's going to cost at least £40 million, probably more like the 53 mark. And also, he might be off to Valencia. But if that link has got legs, whether or not Gomez goes to Aston Villa, it poses a very interesting question for us. Are they going to be going for the starry European names? Is that the sensible way of doing things? Fulham, arguably this year, a cautionary tale. Or are they going to be going for the championship? But of course, the fact that all those guys do play for Brentford raises a question about managers signing players from their former clubs. Now, this is a very difficult one. You can see this one of two ways. On the one hand, you can spin it really positively for Dean Smith. You can say he's a fantastic coach who's a fantastic judge of players' abilities, and he wants to bring in players he can trust. If he's managed them before, it's not just the fact that he's watched them in competitive games. He's worked with them day in, day out. He knows what they're like as people. He knows what kind of influence they're going to be on a dressing room. And he can be confident that he can bring them straight in. He can trust them on and off the pitch. And that they can make an impact immediately. That's if we're being generous. If I'm being cynical, if I'm being cruel, if I'm being downright rude, I might suggest that this is lazy. Now, as a manager, all you're doing, I mean, this is the ultimate absence of scouting, isn't it? Rather than scouring the globe for the next bargain, the next Riyad Mahrez, rather than taking a fine tooth comb to those lower divisions searching for the next Jamie Vardy, you just go, yeah, well, Gareth, I used to coach him for my Sunday league team and he was quite a handy, so let's give him a go. If you're a Villa fan, you can get in touch 0208 7020 558. Are you happy that you could be set to become Brentford 2.0? Or would you like to see your manager look further afield? Do you trust his judgment? Is Jota, a man who actually struggled for what it's worth at Birmingham City, is he the right signing for not an insignificant amount of money simply because the gaffer trusts him? Or is it just in Dean Smith we trust? Of course, if you're a Brentford fan, are you quaking in your boots? This is the reality of life for Brentford. They have this every single summer where the big boys come circling, and to an extent, they do have to listen. But if Dean Smith comes and takes the spine out of Thomas Frank's team, that is a real slap in the face, because let's not forget, the manager and the club left on decent terms, but he did leave midway through last season, and for various other reasons, some of which, of course, really tragic, that was a factor in derailing that Brentford playoff push. Now, if your boss leaves, gets promoted with a different team, and then nicks your team, I think you'd be fairly entitled to feel a little put out. But we're not just talking about the Aston Villa-Brentford axis. We're not just talking about managers signing former players and whether it's a cop-out. We're talking Norwich City and we're talking Derby County. And the fantastic thing about this Football League transfer rumour mill is it doesn't just allow us to get into what kind of deals these lower division clubs are going to be doing. It allows us to have a chat about targets for, with all respect, bigger sides as well. With that in mind, we've been hearing today, and we were just discussing in serious depth on the Crystal Palace fan show, that Aaron Wan-Bissaka could be off to Manchester United. Now, the rumours left, right and centre in the press today are that if AWB goes to United, then Crystal Palace are going to look to Max Ahrens, the exciting teenage fullback of Norwich City, as a replacement. I'm going to be talking to Michael Bailey, who's Norwich City correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press and Pinken.com, about Ahrens. Is he good enough? Is it no surprise that he's been linked with United, with Tottenham, with Red Bull Leipzig in the past? Is he already good enough for Premier League football? But to give him a chance, we're not just going to be talking about the Norwich players who might be nicked. They could be in for J. Rodriguez, £5 million release clause there, if they get the deal done before mid-July. We'll touch on the nature of these release clauses, the bizarreness of those expiry dates as well. Is your club going to be forced into making a move earlier than it wants to, perhaps even earlier than it can? And Gary Medel, there's a name familiar, of course, to Cardiff fans. Could he be off to Norwich as well? That's being reported widely in the Turkish press today. And talking of big deals, how about Frank Lampard? He's Chelsea's all-time record scorer, and could he be back to the club? We're hearing in today's Daily Express that Maurizio Sarri is set to leave Chelsea for Juventus in the next 48 hours. Now, could this set a managerial merry-go-round into motion? He goes to Juve, Lamps goes to Chelsea. Who then comes into Derby County? Well, we're going to need some help answering that question. And I'm delighted to say I've enlisted Richard Cusack, who's sports journalist covering Derby County for the Derby Telegraph. He'll be with us later to give us his take. Is Lampard off? We'll also be talking Harry Wilson. Fantastic on loan for the Rams from Liverpool. But can they afford that £21 million asking price to make it permanent? Coming up, though, we go to Birmingham. We turn our attentions to Dean Smith. And why can't he just move on from Brentford?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow. And I'm delighted to say that we've got another Johnny on the line. Johnny Gould is with us. He's a broadcaster, journalist and, of course, director of the Aston Villa Supporters Trust, because it's time to turn our attentions to Villa. Good evening, Johnny. Thanks for joining me. Let's start with Jack Butland. The Sun today reporting that Villa could be set to make a £20 million move. Good piece of business?
Which is a little bit of a shame. Good evening, Johnny. I mean, we've got Kalinic, who's been injured and looks like he might be coming back for the new season. And we have a bit of a hero in Jed Steer, who spent some of last season on loan at Charlton Athletic and could go down as a very distinguished man, having won two playoff medals in the same season.
Not bad at all.
What a shame. Well, it is, but what a shame that Steer might not start the season as our number one. He may well have earned it, but there's no getting away from the fact that Jack Butland, in the right Premier League side, has a big England future, and that future might be with Aston Villa. It is clear, Johnny, that despite the spine of a team that took us up, we need players in a number of positions, and probably, if I'm brutally honest, we need a bit of quality between the sticks.
Mm. So you suspect that that deal could happen. It's a shame that Jed Steer wouldn't get the opportunity, but do you think that this rumour possibly has got legs?
It probably does. But I have to say, if it doesn't come off for whatever reason, and Butland must play in the Premier League, a player of his stature, a young goalkeeper with a big future as an England international. He has to play in the Premier League.
He's
been gone now, you know, as you say. I mean, he's been gone now with Stoke City out of the Premier League for too long. He chose Stoke, didn't he, over Chelsea because, of course, he'd have never played in the first team. And so, therefore, it's clear that his days at Stoke are over. Why not move to Aston Villa? In terms of his own personal life, he won't have to move home. You know, Stoke is, what, 40 miles up the M6 from Birmingham. And, of course, we have that motorway network leading him round to Boddingmore Heath, our training ground. And he is a player who, in the right side, will restore himself as a potential England number one.
Wonderful stuff. I want to ask you more broadly about Villa's transfer policy for this summer, because you're being linked with a lot of Championship players from clubs at the lower level, but you're also being linked with the likes of Maxi Gomez of Celta Vigo. Bigger names, more expensive players. What can we expect from Dean Smith this summer? Is he going big or is he going a bit more sensible?
He needs to do both, Johnny, because, you know, we've signed Jota and a lot of Villa fans are scratching their head. And I think what we need to remember is with every signing that we make, and we've signed Anwar El Ghazi, who was so magnificent in the playoff final.
Got him on the cheap, apparently.
It's a bargain, something like under 8, 9 million. What a player. He's got a platform to play in the Premier League for the first time, and good luck to Anwar El Ghazi. He's a box of tricks, and also he's got a real hunger. So he was such a very important player in midfield for Villa as well, and he played alongside Grealish and McGinn. We really do have quite a fearsome midfield coming up from the Championship. Now, I've got to say, players who are all three of Premier League quality. But let's talk about Jota here just for a moment. It doesn't necessarily mean that our first signing of the summer is going to be a regular first teamer, because it's clear we need quality. It's a nine-month season, and Thierry Henry always used to say the same thing. The quality of a Championship-winning side comes from the length of its bench, the quality of it. And he was talking really about his frustrations at Arsenal not really competing towards the end of his career at Arsenal. And the same goes for Aston Villa. You know, we might start off with a rocking first 11, but, you know, as the pitches get heavier and the nights draw in and injuries start mounting, you know, we might find ourselves at the wrong end of the table. So we need signings like Jota from, although he came from Birmingham City, he came from a Brentford background. There's rumours about Mopay as well. But those guys, you know, need to be upended by absolute quality. And Maxi Gomez, goodness me. Goodness me.
I think, if I Johnny, without meaning to ruin your day, I think he is probably going to go to Valencia. Are you all right? There. There are other strikers. There are other strikers out there,
Johnny,
for you. I'm sorry.
Johnny, can I just talk about him for a bit?
You can declare your love.
Well, it hasn't happened yet. And we both begin with a V and end in an A. So he might think he's signing for a Spanish club. And the other thing about him is, if I was to say anything about him, mate, you're 22. I think you're from Uruguay. You played in the World Cup. Do not mess about with a Europa League side in Spain. Come to the Premier League, because it's the best league in the world. He looks and plays like Sergio Aguero, and I think he's going to be an absolute bomb. I really do.
Could you see him going to Villa?
I could, yes. What the hell? Come on. But seriously, if I was talking to a young player like Wenger, a young Latino, I know that there's an appeal in playing for the mother country in Spain and you speak the language and everything, but at some point you've got to challenge yourself and look at all those brilliant players who did just that with Manchester City when they were just about coming of age a decade ago. Look at Sergio Aguero and David Silva, and they've had marvellous careers in Manchester, and they could have easily signed for Barca or Real or even Valencia. So I would say to Gomez, okay, mate, I move sideways from Celta Vigo to Valencia, but come to Aston Villa, because Aston Villa is in the Primera Liga.
Yeah, it's a very, very good argument. And of course, he would be able to chat to Jota in an accent similar to the one that you just used. I want to pick up...
Muchas gracias, Juanito.
Little Johnny, excuse me. I'm not having any of that.
I see you speak the lingo.
Let's talk about Jota, though, because he is possibly the first of many former Brentford players, former, of course, Dean Smith players, who could join the club this summer. We're hearing that you've had a bid rejected for Syed Benrahma. You described El Ghazi as a box of tricks. The Algerian is quite something as well. Links with Morpay, links with Romain Sawyers, links even with Ezri Konsa. Are you encouraged by this? Are you encouraged by your manager looking to reliable pairs of hands who he knows he can trust? Or do you think this is a bit lazy and they might not be good enough?
There is something about Dean Smith and motivating individuals that makes me think that he can get the very best out of his players and mentally focus them to perform beyond where they think their abilities might land. And I'm now going to use the parallel of the greatest club manager of them all, Brian Clough, who did that with another bunch of second division players who came up via third place, a bit like us in the playoffs, and then won the league title the year after. Now, I'm not saying we're going to win the league, but there were players like Kenny Burns, John Robertson, John McGovern, Tony Woodcock, Peter Withe, who all came up into the first division, the Premier League as it was, or it is now, if you know what I mean, and delivered so devastatingly and knocked Liverpool off their perch. And you can quote me on that.
So you're confident then that these Brentford boys could be good signings and it's not just a cop-out in terms of scouting?
It's not a cop-out, but I have to say it's not his finished work, Johnny, either. I mean, if he wants to sign players that he knows personally and build a starting 16, if you like, players that he can change around when we're 1-0 down and rely upon when we need a corner heading in at the fast stick with Mopay, etc., that's great. But we do need players of the quality of Gomez. We need players who've been in around the major leagues of Europe, as well as players who've got Premier League experience. But I have to say, you know, I tell you what the vanguard of laziness is, that's signing players who used to play for us. Now we're back in the Premier League. I do not want to see James Milner back at Villa.
You don't want to see Benteke?
No, I don't. I don't want to see Fabian Delph or Benteke. You know, but you know why? Because we're 3 years older and all.
Can Fabian Delph even enter Birmingham anymore? I imagine
exactly.
He's not a very, very popular man.
Exactly. No, he's on his way. He was club captain. He's got an England career of sorts. He's at the best club in the country, and he's got a career of sorts there. He's on huge money. I'm not sure he'll be remembered by too many people in 10 years' time, but he will not be remembered at Villa Park with the affection that he has in the rest of the game.
So, Johnny, the message that you're giving me seems to be that signing these players from Brentford is fine. It's sensible. Dean knows them. He can get the best out of them, but only if there's a couple of really glitzy talents coming in as well.
Yeah, we need match winners, and we need to encourage also some of the better players that have come up with us. So some of those better players are Jack Grealish and John McGinn. And dear, oh dear, you know, I'm holding my breath, John, to the point where I've gone purple. I am waiting for Tyrone Mings to sign for us.
I know you're a big fan of his.
Oh, come on, Tyrone. I mean, really, I don't know what Bournemouth are holding out for, but he wants to play for Villa. And if it means £20 million and not £15 million, so be it, because the player is absolute quality. And like I've said before, Mings deserves a Premier League career. And who knows, if it goes well, he deserves an England cap.
Wonderful stuff. Well, Johnny, I hope the next time we talk, he is a Villa player on a permanent basis. Lovely to speak to you as ever. Johnny Gould there, the broadcaster, journalist, and of course, director of the Aston Villa Supporters Trust. And if you're just joining us, spare a thought for Thailand in the Women's World Cup. It is USA Women 7, Thailand 0. There is over half an hour to go in that game. If I were a USA fan, I would be chanting, "We want 10, we want 10, we want 10. Of course, for all of your Women's World Cup coverage, you're in exactly the right place. It's Love Sport Radio. Every Friday night, 7 till 8, you're with me, Johnny Burrow, Lily Ag, the Charlton striker, and Ella German as well for all of your Women's World Cup fix. And of course, here tonight on the Rumour Mill, we are, of course, playing two truths and a lie. The rules are simple. Two of these transfer rumours have genuinely been reported in today's press. One, my devious producer and I have made up. Here are your three to choose from. J. Rodriguez to Norwich, Jack Clark of Leeds to Bournemouth, and Joe Aribo of Charlton to Celtic. Get voting on Twitter at Love Sport Radio. Get ringing in 0208 7020 558 is that number. And coming up, we've talked a lot about Brentford's players getting poached, but let's get their point of view.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and I'm delighted to say that I am joined on the line by Billy the Bee Grant of Besotted and, of course, the Brentford Fan Show right here on Love Sport Radio. Good evening, Billy. Thanks for joining me. We've been talking a lot about Dean Smith trying to poach his former Bees players this summer. Are you worried that he's going to go in for a full-on raid?
Oh, well, you're right, Johnny. I don't know, worried's not the word. I think it was. I think it was kind of on the cards. If you think about it, you know, any manager that goes away from a club, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to come back and they're going to look at the players that they know. I mean, Uwe Rösler did exactly the same thing when he left Brentford. He went to Wigan. The first thing he did is he nabbed Forshaw, which didn't go down particularly well, you know, at the time. You know, so I'd say, you know, Dean Smith. You know, good manager, good guy. He knows the players really, really well. He knows that we had quality. He brought quality in to Brentford this last season. He knows that because he was there. You know, he knows that the club has actually invested and they bought some players. And he's been through, when I say he's been through the mill, as in that he started off at Brentford and he had the original Warburton players, which some of them were probably like, you know, not necessarily 100% in his camp. So he had to spend a bit of time building his own players. You know, bringing his own players in along with the directors of football and stuff. So 3 years later, you know, the players that have come in, you know, he's the one that's nurtured them and brought them through. Your Rolly Watkinses, you know, your Ben Ramas, your Malpays. Okay, yes, the directors of football and our scouting system sort of finds them. He tells the type of players they want, but he's the one that's nurtured them. So, of course, it's natural there's going to be him and O'Kelly. I've got to sit down there and think, look, all right, okay, we've got a load of money now in the pot. Where do we look? You know, who can we rely on? And I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I was at as you probably know, I went after the playoffs. I went to the playoffs semi-finals. I went to the Villa game up at Aston Villa when Villa played West Brom, and I had a little chat with Dean Smith. You know, after the match, then when they beat West Brom at home, you know, really nice guy. First thing he asked me about is that, how's the family, how's the son? You know, like I said to you, great guy. We just started about bits and pieces, and you know, he just reflected. He said, you know, you've got some great talent there at Brentford. You know, so he knows, and everybody knows, and he knows them more. And at the final, you know, again, Brentford, you know, we at the final, you know, they won. I was at the final at Wembley as well. I had a quick chat with Richard O'Kelly, actually, on the pitch, and I was just chatting away to him. And I just said, you know, congratulations, guys. You know, congratulations to you. You know, okay, you left Brentford, but at the end of the day, listen, you know, Dean's back at his home club. And we got to tip our hat to him. So, you know, there's no remorse there or anything like that from the Bees fans. And I said to him, you've got a load of money in the pot now. I said, I'd be actually very surprised if you guys don't come in for any of the Brentford players. I said, I'll be gobsmacked. I said, Neil Malpay, brilliant player. He scored the goals. You know him. You've been with him for a season. You saw him grow. You know, a lot of clubs would probably actually not take a risk on Malpay because they might say that he's, you know, too small, or, you know, he's not the type of player that, you know, can deliver in a higher division. But because they know him, they'll probably take a risk. So, you know, I said to them, I'll be very surprised if you didn't come in for one or two of the Brentford players because you've got a load of money in the pot. But so will a lot of other teams will do as well, Johnny. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of other people are looking at us. They know that we've got a very good track record in getting players from the rough jewels as they are, you know, developing them after a year or two. And then at that stage, they think, let Brentford do the work. Let them find them. Let them, you know, take the risk, you know, of them not being very good. And what we'll do is, because we've got a lot more money, then we'll just, you know, we'll pluck them from them when they're, when they're being developed. And we know that. And it's, as a fan, it really is quite frustrating because, you know, to be fair, I'd love to see players at the club for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. But, you know, unfortunately, we're still at a developing stage. And we, you know, somebody offers us £30 million, £35 million for a player. I would say that we'd probably take it.
Bill, is there any part of you that would resent Dean Smith for coming and taking some of those Brentford boys?
It's a difficult one because obviously you look back at it and in a way you sort of think, we missed out on the playoffs by, you know, maybe, you know, 6 or 7 points. If we'd won about 3 or 4 more games instead of drawn them, you know, or some of the games that we lost that we didn't do, you know, we lost 8 games out of 9 or 9 games out of 10 at one stage. You know, there's an argument to say that if Dean Smith was there, we wouldn't have lost all those games. And this is not having to go at Thomas Frank because we went through a transition stage at that time. But if there was no transition and we, you know, we played Leeds United, we just drew them, we almost beat them in October. And we were looking all right at that stage. We were looking good. We were just going into the international break. Bang, Dean Smith goes and it just disrupted everything. But if he hadn't done, you know, we would have carried on. The chances are we would have got to playoffs. You know, you saw teams that were in the playoffs again. No due respect. But, you know, Derby County, great cup side. You know, they did well against Man United. They did, you know, very well in a number of games. But over the season, you probably look at Derby and think, you know, were they really, you know, good enough to be a Premier League side? You know, we could have been in Derby's place easily.
Yeah.
You know, West Brom, you know, pull off, we could have been in their place as well. So to answer your question about Dean Smith, I just sort of think, it could have been us. So for him to sort of kind of leave us and then we don't get the playoffs and then him go to Aston Villa
and Nick your team.
Take the players, and then do the business, it's kind of a little bit gutsy, to be honest. But, you know, what can we do?
A little bit hard to take. Billy, just finally, obviously we're hearing there's been a solid bid made for Benrahma. That's if Sky Sports are to be believed. Which of your players do you think are the most likely to leave this summer, to Villa or otherwise?
I think even though he said he's not going to go, and I'd love him not to go because he's such a nice bloke, is Malpay. I just think that he scores a lot of goals and teams need goal scorers, and they put, you know, and if a team comes in and offers us money, and the nice thing is that we can turn away now away money. Now we can actually turn away if somebody says, all right, here you go, it's 15 grand, million. We go, that's all right, no thanks. Turn it away, you know. And you know, with Benrahma, I could imagine they probably offered 20 million. We've gone, that's all right, no thanks, we don't want to sell him yet.
How much would it take you to sell Benrahma, Billy?
Well, at the moment I reckon they'll probably put 30 mil on him, only because they know that he is going to get better. He's only had one season in this division. It's interesting if you look at the way that we worked with Chris Meppham, one minute he's B-team player, playing B-team games against QPR and all these other teams. Bang, next minute he's in the side and he's playing a few games for us. And then, you know, we thought, oh, he looks quite good. But before he'd even played 20 games, I think
suddenly
it was,
he's off.
Yeah, no, he come in and from Bournemouth and he offered us sort of six million or something like that. And we went, no thanks, all right. And we figured, oh, so he was in the B-team a while ago and 6 million. We said, no, it's all right. And then he came in 6 months later, offered him another 12 million. No, it's all right, thanks. So it's almost like we've got this thing where we've set the figure and we're actually willing to turn people away, whereas beforehand we never do that. So that's a good thing for Brentford to a certain extent, but I still would rather if we just kept these players and then we actually kind of, you know, went up with the team that we know. Because I think that if we manage to keep that team together, great goal by the USA there, by the way. If we manage to keep that adult team together, I think we could get promoted, because looking at what happened this season, we've got some great players and it's really annoying that we have to breed them and then we move them on and then we have to start all over again. But that's the game that we're in. But one season, maybe everything might come together all at the same time.
Well, Billy, we can only hope. Thanks ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you as ever. Billy the Beat, Grant there of Besotted and, of course, the Brentford Fan Show right here on Love Sport Radio. Spare another thought for Thailand because there's been another goal. The USA's ladies are winning 8-0. The biggest ever Women's World Cup, well, is Germany 11, Argentina 0 in 2007. USA have got 20 minutes. Can they do it? A friendly reminder, of course, that Thailand's goalkeeper is only 5'5".
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Football Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by Michael Bailey, who is Norwich City correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press and Pinken.com. Good evening, Michael. Thanks for joining me. Max Arons is being heavily, heavily linked with Crystal Palace as a potential replacement for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Do you think this move is likely?
Johnny. Yeah, good evening. Cool, yeah, that's a big old first question, isn't it? I guess it depends how much money Palace want to throw at Norwich.
How much would it take?
Yeah, that's a very good question too. I think I kind of find myself referring back to last summer when Norwich City were a side desperately in need of money, although they did a very good job of not really letting on. And they managed to sell James Maddison, a player, 21, who'd had a pretty decent season in an average championship side and hadn't played any Premier League football, barely played any under-21s football. And they managed to sell him for 24 million quid to a Premier League team, of course, in Leicester. So this time around, you've got a younger player who, I guess, probably individually hasn't shone, but that's because he's been playing in a team that won the championship and is going to be in the Premier League next season anyway. So Norwich have absolutely zero pressure to sell him. And I find it hard to think that it would probably take a reasonable valuation. I think it's going to take a lot more than that, which probably isn't what Palace fans would want to hear.
Interesting stuff. I've just got to quickly step away, Michael, with the news that it is the USA 9, Thailand 0 in the Women's World Cup. It's not often that a football score can be described as rude, but I think this is actually now getting to the point of impolite. Do you think Arons will go? I mean, Daniel Farke has done a fantastic job bringing Norwich up. Surely he's going to be very, very determined to not see his side taken to pieces before they've even had a crack at the top division.
Yeah, I think so. And what Daniel Farke, Stuart Webber, the sporting director, and then Max Arons have is an understanding of what each other will do. Norwich are not going to go into the Premier League next season and recruit a load of players. They will pick, you know, one or two that they really want to strengthen what they've got, but I think generally it'll be giving a lot of players from last season a chance because they kind of know the structure and they really do deeply believe in how they do things. And Max has just flourished under that entirely. He fits in exactly with how Daniel plays. Daniel really does trust young players. He picks them and then he sticks with them. Max Arons played, I think, virtually every minute of the season once he made his league debut at the very start of September in an East Anglian derby away from home, by the way. And I think Max knows he will play. It won't even come under discussion if he, you know, manages to perform well. So that's quite a difficult situation to kind of walk out on, albeit, you know, it would be an interesting situation and interesting shoes he'd have to fill it. Still at Palace, but I think Max is a very grounded youngster, and I have to be honest, I would be surprised if this comes off, because I would imagine Palace might end up either finding something that's a bit more reasonable in price or someone who's easier to prize out.
Talking of things that are being a bit more reasonable, USA's women certainly aren't. It's 10-0. It's just rude. It's worth noting, well, Michael, that the Thailand goalkeeper is 5'5", and they do play in standard football size goals. So to be fair, you are going to struggle to stop things. How good can Arons be?
Yeah, now that's a fun one, because I got a hold of it sort of coming into pre-season last season that they were really. They were really keen to see how he would do. I wouldn't necessarily say they were excited, but they sort of looked at him and thought, this guy can make the step up. But you have to appreciate that they brought in Ben Marshall as a right back. They brought in Felix Paslak from Dortmund on loan as a right back. And
that was a very flair move, by the way, rated as one of the hottest prospects in German football. Where are you off to? East Anglia on loan.
Yeah, that one caught me. It caught me out how... it captured everyone's imagination. I was like, what, really? But it was a proper, I think it was one for the hipster, that one.
And really
it didn't
was.
Really happen, did it, on the pitch. But the fact that Max Arons effectively ended two right-back careers at Norwich and Ivo Pinto had to leave as well, I think that says it all about where he is now. And that was his first senior football. They didn't send him out on loan. He was only playing under-23s before that. And what is remarkable, I think, is just his phenomenal level of consistency. Say Jamal Lewis, who is just as much fun on the left flank. He came in, got sort of 6 months of the season before, came in, did really well, level dropped a bit inconsistent, made a few mistakes, stuck with it, and he really then kicked on this season. Max never had the drop-off. He just looked so comfortable all the way through, both one-on-one defensively, but also assists and marauding runs. Don't get me wrong, he is a complete package, and at some point I think he will play for a very, very good club. It's just how long Norwich can hold on to him and allow him to develop, and I think Norwich fans will hope they get that chance too.
Whether it's for Norwich or Palace, are you confident that he can just step up into the Premier League seamlessly?
I guess so, because he's looked so comfortable at each level he stepped up as well. It's almost like, you know, when strikers, they just look like they can score goals. It doesn't really matter what the level is because they're so cool in front of goal, and they just, the goal size doesn't change and they just know where to kind of put it. And I get that sense with Max. Obviously, it's very early days, but he just looks so comfortable, consistently stepping up in level. He made probably three mistakes for the entirety of last season in a very young back line. So he's going to be tested way beyond what he's had before, and that will be interesting. And you imagine the first couple of months will probably be a degree of him having to adjust to the level and just appreciating the platform at which he's playing at. But certainly that level of consistency and how level-headed he is, and the fact he would get a chance if he is at Norwich and playing regularly, I think there's a really good opportunity for him. But I think all Norwich fans know what this is like. You know, they've seen Norwich in the Premier League a lot in the last sort of 7 or 8 years, so they know what the step up is going to be. I think they're quite excited, to be honest, to see players get a go. Exactly, and see the young players get a go. I think there's a bit of patience to maybe see how they do.
So you think Aarons will stay? Is that your message?
I would say it's a much higher percentage than him going, but it will come. Norwich are very good at earning a lot of money for their talents now.
Yeah.
So I think if Palace really want him, then they'll probably have to pay probably beyond what they think is reasonable, to be honest.
Well, Michael, it's been lovely speaking to you, and I will leave you with the news that my producer is full on crying with laughter through the glass because it is USA 11, Thailand 0. There have been 3 goals in the duration of our conversation. They now need one more to set the record for a most brutal win in a Women's World Cup. So clearly we're doing something right. Michael, wonderful to speak to you. Thanks ever so much. Michael Bailey, their Norwich City correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press and Pinken.com. Talk about setting your stall out early. USA's women come into this World Cup as favourites. They are and always have been the biggest team in women's football. And just going, well, you know what, you're doubting us. Okay, we're playing a minnow in relative terms, but 11-0, have some of that. And as yet, you know what, 5 minutes left. It's going to be 12. It's got to be 12. We will give you updates throughout the show. Coming up, Lampard. Could he be back to Chelsea? Surely Derby won't want to let him go. We'll be asking Richard Cusack, sports journalist covering Derby for the Derby Telegraph.
This is Love Sport.
I told you. I gave you one little ad break, and it is the USA 12, Thailand 0 at the Women's World Cup. I really feel sorry for Thailand here because the US are celebrating each goal more passionately than the last. This is brutal to watch. And on a serious note, this surely does have to lead to conversations, which have been going on for a while, by the way, about the size of goals in women's football. The technical ability of these women is in no doubt at all. They are easily as good as the men. But the Thailand goalkeeper is 5'5". She's playing in a full-size goal. I'm not saying this to demean her or to demean the sport, but seriously, what's she supposed to do? Because you can't save something in the top corner if you're not big enough to reach it. That's something that we will, of course, be discussing on the Women's World Cup show coming up this Friday, 7 till 8. But for now, to Derby County, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by Richard Cusack, who's a sports journalist covering Derby County for the Derby Telegraph and Derbyshire Live. Good evening, Derby. Good evening, Jack. First of all, how did you rate Frank Lampard's performance? Good evening, Jack. Derby, Richard. Richard, good evening, Richard. How did you rate Frank Lampard's performance this season?
Hey, evening, Johnny. Thanks for having me back on.
Thanks for coming.
I thought Lampard did really well, all things considered, in his first season in charge of management. He was tasked with not just getting things on the playing side right, but also bringing the average age of the squad down, implementing a new style of play, reconnecting the fans with the team. The Gary Rowett season last year, well, the season before the one just gone, he got Derby to the playoff semi-finals, of course, but fans were alienated by the sort of style of football, a lot of empty seats at Pride Park, despite going on a good run towards the end of the season. And what Lampard's done is he's united the fans, and you could see that on the playoff charge. Pride Park was getting full. Fans are starting to believe. Ultimately, they didn't quite get there in the end at Wembley, but fans are already excited for next season now.
And with good reason. The question, of course, if the transfer rumour mill is to be believed, is will the same manager be in charge? We're hearing in today's Daily Express that we could have confirmation of Maurizio Sarri's move to Juventus within the next 48 hours. And if that happens, Lampard is one of the names in the frame to take over at Chelsea. Could you see that happening?
Yeah, obviously he's touted alongside the likes of Max Allegri, Ajax boss Erik ten Hag, and obviously Gareth Southgate's assistant to England, Steve Holland, and Wolves' Nuno Santo and Javi Gracia of Watford. So obviously there's a bit of competition for that job. I personally think it might be a bit too early for Frank, given Chelsea's, I know they've taken it to the CAS, but obviously Chelsea's impending transfer ban. I know that obviously the lure of Chelsea just might be too much for Frank, but I'm wondering, is that his job when he's proved himself at a lower level? Is that his ultimate goal, or will he want to take that job as soon as it comes, because he might not get himself in a position where Chelsea come calling. We understand at Derbyshire Live and Derby Telegraph that reports suggesting that Lampard has already held talks with Chelsea, that they're wide of the mark. That's the information we've been getting.
Okay. Interesting.
Tonight. So yeah, obviously, but he was pitching in London, wasn't he, I think, with Didier Drogba. It's hardly unsurprising that Lampard, given that obviously that's where his family are down there, that he'd be knocking about in London today and this week. So I personally think it might be a little bit too early for him, but you can never say. That's not to say that Chelsea won't come in for him, and that's not to say that he won't take it if indeed the offer is made, which we don't, obviously, there's been no offer made just now.
Richard, you'll be delighted to hear that it's now the USA 13, Thailand 0. This is absolutely brutal. It's like watching Slaughter broadcast by the BBC. It's absolutely extraordinary and sort of captivating as well. I think your point about this move possibly coming too soon for Lampard is a fantastic one. But equally, as you say, will the chance come again? But in terms of that transfer ban, if Chelsea are banned from making any deals this summer, or certainly registering players, could you not argue that that is a perfect reason to bring Lampard in? He'd come with Jody Morris, who knows those Chelsea youth players better than anybody on this planet. They could work with the likes of Tammy Abraham, with Reece James, and build something from the bottom.
Of course, it's paradoxical, isn't it? Like you say, Johnny, the fact that Lampard and Jody Morris have cultivated the youth so well at Derby, and I'm not just talking about working with Mason Mount and Fikayo Tomori, who both stood out. They were immense last season, the pair of them, and the improvement, particularly in Tomori under Lampard and Jody Morris behind the scenes, was notable. When he first came into the side against Leeds in August, there were the makings of a good player there. He looked confident, but he defensively seemed to really, really improve as the season went on. Bringing through Jaden Bogle, who's been linked with a £10 million move to Brighton. You know, he was sort of in knocking about in the academy last year, last season. He was given a spot on the bench towards the end of the season, but he really, last year was his breakout season. But they gave them placed on the bench to Max Bird, Jaden Mitchell-Lawson, Tyree Wilson. So obviously, if Chelsea are going to look to want to bring you through, I can't see a better sort of team to bring in other than Lampard and Jody Morris and Chris Jones in the background as well, the work he does on the training pitch. So again, that's a good reason why they might do it.
Now, that's a very, very interesting suggestion, Richard. How likely do you think this move is?
I don't think it's very likely. Not this summer. I wonder if Chelsea, I know it sounds daft because I've just explained exactly why they might want to bring Lampard and Jody Morris in. What we've heard from Lampard after the defeat at Wembley last month, was that he said on the radio station, he said that this isn't my last game for Derby. So he sounds like he's really, really committed. And I make the same point whenever I'm sort of asked this question. Derby signed Graham Shinney last month on a free contract agreement when his deal at Aberdeen expires this summer. Why would Derby be signing players if they weren't? And obviously Shinney himself said, "Oh, I'm looking forward to working with Lampard, etc., etc." Well, I don't understand why Derby would be signing players and pressing on with plans for next season. Excuse me, if they weren't sure that Lampard was going to be there, that's the point I always come back to.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very interesting one, and good to hear you cut through the noise as well, Richard, because the excitement of the deal, the drama and romance of Lampard to Chelsea, I think makes people feel it's more likely than perhaps it is. Good to have a bit of realism. Let's have a chat about one other person who could be leaving the club just quickly. Liam Delap, he's 16. He's a striker in the youth team. He's son, of course, of former Stoke player Rory Delap. We're hearing in your own good publication, the Derby Telegraph, that he could be off to Man City.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're hearing as well. Liam Delap, we don't know a great deal about him, but he was a top scorer at a tournament in Turkey for England's under-16s in January. He finished top scorer with 4 goals in that tournament, so he's obviously a star at his age group. That's a situation where we don't know an awful lot about what's gone on there. We just understand that he's nearing a move to Manchester City. It must be if I can't imagine many young lads who are going to turn around and say, if Manchester City come calling, say, no thanks, I'm happy where I am.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I think Derby are obviously, they will be compensated because they've played a part in his development, getting him to the ability he is. He sounds like he'll be one to watch out for. As with a lot of these young players who make the step up to Manchester City, will he be afforded first team opportunities? We don't know, but obviously, very best of luck to young Liam, and we hope he turns out to be a star for England in the future.
Wonderful stuff, Richard. And just a final one. Harry Wilson was fantastic on loan from Liverpool this season. We're hearing reports he could be allowed to leave the club permanently for somewhere between 20, 25 million. Is there any world in which Derby can afford him?
Well, that certainly got social media talking yesterday. A few of my friends were texting me saying, oh, you know, I've read the report online about Derby being possibly mentioned as one of the places where Wilson could end up, but I can't see Wilson having another year in the Championship, let alone him coming to Derby, because I'm not quite sure that he'd want to come. Liverpool would let him back out on loan.
I think he's leaving permanently.
So do I, and I don't think Derby have the financial clout to be able to buy him for 20, whatever it is, £21 million, I think was the valuation. I can see him ending up somewhere in the lower echelons of the Premier League. I certainly think he's good enough to make the step up.
Yeah, sort of Newcastle sort of level.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah, somewhere like that. A big club that's willing to give a chance to a youngster to prove himself. He's only 22 years old. Obviously, Mason Mount's got a couple of years on him. Remains to be seen what happened to Mason. But Harry Wilson was immense last season. He scored 18 goals, 6 assists. We all know about those free kicks against Stoke, Manchester United, and Sheffield United on Boxing Day. But it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on in the Premier League, because he did struggle when he first started playing for Derby.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't his first spell in the Championship, because he played and pressed at Hull in January last year when he signed. But it'll be interesting to see what happens to Harry. There's certainly the makings of a top player there. But he might just be unlucky at Liverpool because they've got such a strong side at the moment.
Yeah, very hard to break into. Richard, lovely to speak to you. Fantastic stuff. Thanks for your time. Richard Cusack there, sports journalist who covers Derby County for the Derby Telegraph and Derbyshire Live. 13-0. 13 for the USA's women's side against Thailand. Now, in that, Alex Morgan scored 5 of those. Is the Golden Boot already over? She was tipped as the winner, not just because she's a fantastic forward, even though she plays slightly deeper than a conventional nine, largely because she was going to play Thailand. She was tipped to get a hatful. She's done that. Is that the Golden Boot tied up? Five was enough to win it in 2011. And I have to say, the US women's team looking very, very impressive. We'll be touching on all of these issues, of course, on the Women's Football Show this Friday, 7 till 8, and every Friday, for that matter. Been a fantastic edition of the Rumour Mill. We found out that Dean Smith is right to target former Brentford players, but only if he brings the stars in as well. It's too soon for Frank Lampard at Chelsea. And could a man from Norwich end up at Palace?
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.